On this hot Sunday morning, these are pleasant readings because they should be challenging to us. First reading we have from Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is sort of the latter part of it's later than the Pentateuch, probably about 500 years before the birth of Christ. And it's Moses' farewell to his people before he dies, before getting to the Holy Land. The book of Deuteronomy is very rich because there's much more of this notion of the personal God. For instance, the better way of translating the first commandment in Deuteronomy is not, I am the Lord, but rather to say, I am Yahweh, the only one for you. It's love language. That makes a lot more sense because then you have the law written on the heart. The law is not something in the sky you've got to go searching for, but no, it's inside us. We have to express it. And what is the relationship? We've been reading, the daily readings for the last couple of weeks have been from the Old Testament, Book of Kings. Here again you have the thing of the difference between Yahweh and his relationship to the people and all the other pagan gods. Because this God enters into a personal relationship. I am the Lord your God. It's much more positive. Second reading we have from Colossians, Christ is the firstborn of the new creation. He's firstborn from the dead. He's the firstborn. One of the most difficult things I find are kids that I'm teaching who have Catholic education. They are innocent of the possibility of Christianity. They don't know the creeds. Because I had an argument with a kid who knew he was the most brilliant student ever to come to this university. After all, he was a Jefferson scholar, a bunch of other things, and I've taught some many Jefferson scholars over the years. And one of the things was he challenged me that I made a mistake on his exam because I said, what does the creed define? That Jesus is consubstantial with the Father, or the Son or Word is consubstantial? That's the same thing. No, Jesus has a birth certificate. We celebrate his birthday every year on Christmas. That at a given point in human history, at a given point, the one through whom all things were made, he himself became a creature, took on human flesh, just like us. And I found it was very difficult for this young man, who knew he was brilliant, and therefore he knew that he was far more brilliant than I, he couldn't get it. The very essence. And one of the things is, because we believe he is the firstborn of the dead, raised again from the dead, this man, Jesus, eternal Son of God, at a given point becomes a creature, and then is completely obedient to the Father to lead us on. He becomes the head of the body, the church. Something difficult for us to grapple with sometimes, too. Because we all know the church should conform to us. And one problem that Catholicism will always have in the United States is it is transnational. It is not limited to the United States. And yet we would like it to be in many ways. And finally, we have Luke's Gospel today. Story of the Good Samaritan. Know that you love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And then, of course, who is the neighbor? I mean, the lawyer is challenging Jesus. The lawyer is not interested in Jesus' answer. He's trying to challenge him. How many times are we in that same boat? Like the student of mine. He was not interested in the answer. He was trying to challenge me. Sad that we think people being that way, but most of us are. So how do we understand this? Well, first of all, we have to ask, who is Christ? Ultimate question, what do we think? Secondly, we have to live the faith. It's not just a series of abstract principles. We're living it. And finally, we have to love our neighbor, and over and over again, we have to ask the question of ourselves that Jesus asked of the poor attorney. Poor attorney, by the way, notice he doesn't say the Samaritans, well, the one who had mercy. He can't cough up the words. And I'll come back to that. First of all, who is Christ? Well, Colossians says it very well today. He's the firstborn of creation, firstborn from the dead. He is the means by which we are able to get to heaven. I had a student this year who had very great difficulty, too, understanding. He was convinced that his minister had always told him that Jesus had only the appearance of being human. Because you couldn't possibly have God becoming man. The very essence of Christianity, in other words, was being denied by this minister, if the student was accurately proclaiming. This is part of the mystery. God became man so that we could become like God. But we have to follow him, and that means we have to lose ourselves. And somehow or other it means that we have to, you know, move beyond the world we know so many times and recognize that we continue to work through him as members of the mystical body. That's why we Catholics believe the church is visible in the world. I don't know if you saw CBS twice this week, had the story of the dedication of the new Ark out in Kentucky, and they built a replica of the Ark according to the Bible. And in order to work there, you have to be a Christian. That would mean you can't be a Catholic. Because do we take it seriously? Do we take it literally? That's what they meant on the television when they said you had to be a Christian to work there. Literal interpretation of the scripture. No, that's not where we are. We also believe the church is visible. We also believe the church is inserted in the world. We also believe the church has to address questions of the world. And maybe it doesn't address them the way we would like to. Our faith is not in the abstract. Our faith is in the person of Jesus Christ still directing the church, the head of the mystical body, the firstborn from the dead. And where he is, we are called to be. The second point, living the faith. One of the things that can be difficult at times is the church. Through the church, Christ is visible in the world. It is not merely spiritual. It is that. But that's a good cop-out. You know, that means, as somebody has said recently, no religious leader has a right to judge somebody else. Well, I guess that leaves out Jesus Christ. Certainly leaves out the structure of the Catholic Church. Somehow or other, we don't always agree with the authority. I found that too many Catholics lately in the United States, they are perfectly comfortable in the Catholic Church, provided the Pope always agrees with them. And as a Catholic historian, I have to admit that popes have to be dead for 25 years before we can evaluate them honestly. Because they're all human beings, they make a lot of mistakes. But one of the things is, nevertheless, they are the source of visible unity of the Church. And it's very easy for us to always agree when somebody else agrees with us. We're very good. In the name of the Father and the Son and me. And somehow or other, maybe that isn't Catholic. It's never easy to be a Catholic, and that's why, as you know, my favorite saint is Peter. Peter is not afraid to admit he made a mistake. Most of us are. Peter, what do we know most about him? He keeps on goofing. He never quite gets it right until finally, like his master, his divine master, he is crucified also, but upside down according to tradition. He was not worthy to be crucified in the same way. But until that moment, he's never getting it right. He immediately misunderstands what Jesus wants. He denies Jesus. None of us are going to be able to do that. But he doesn't wallow in his guilt. He picks himself up and moves on because he's open to where the divine master is leading him. Not where we want to be led necessarily. And that's a message for us. And finally, loving the neighbor. The Samaritans were a schismatic group of Jews. They accepted only the first five books of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch. And therefore, they did not worship in Jerusalem. They saw themselves as separate. Therefore, they were detested by the true Jews. And therefore, when Jesus uses this thing, the Samaritan comes by. The Levites were the priestly caste, by the way. The priests were taken from the Levite family. So therefore, here the priests, people like me, they go on the other side of the road not to get involved. It's the Samaritan who reaches out in love and concern. Who be the Samaritans today? Well, right now, hate seems to be our one virtue across the board. We've seen in the last week the slaughter in Dallas, Baton Rouge, Minneapolis. Black lives matter, so do white lives and yellow lives and red lives and brown lives. All lives matter. The richness in so many ways of the Catholic Church is not limited to one nation or one race. It's you name it. It used to be when I would go to Italy, which I do regularly, you know, sort of boring because everybody looked alike. Whereas we are everything in this country, so it is sort of the church in microcosm. But we can become too American, and we become very self-righteous, and we can decide, well, we cannot trust Muslims. I've had members of my family tell me that. And yet, one of my closer friends in my department is a Muslim. Very interesting person, because people are unaware that most of the victims of ISIL are Muslims, the overwhelming majority. And one of the things was, this man was born in this country, went to that university in New Haven, and some other people I know did too. But then his father and his uncles all went to Al-Hikmah University, run by the Jesuits of the New England province in Baghdad. They also run a high school, Baghdad College, where most of his father's and uncles and his father went too. And it's a big joke always with the alumni was, what's the big Jesuit school in the New England province? Boston College, B.C. Baghdad College, B.C. So just they bring over the sweatshirts, just give them out again to the Arabs over there. Now, the point is, many times we tend to generalize about these other people who are different than we are. Instead, we have to recognize who was really the neighbor to the man who was victim of the robber, this rejected Samaritan. What is the message for us? We have to start at home, following Christ, recognizing it's not an abstraction, it's a person, the divine person eternally begotten, who at a given point in human history enters into our history, becomes like us in all things except sin. It's growth of knowledge of a person, and we do that by love. We do it by opening ourselves, as Peter ultimately did, even when Peter sins like no one of us will ever be able to. He picks himself up and moves on. As soon as we start making ourselves the center, then we cannot hear the word anymore. We cannot hear the word of God leading us on, calling us to be more united with Christ, to be able to reach out and see every other human being as our brother or sister. That's hard to do. But Christianity has never been something that was supposed to be easy. Nor is it supposed to be masochistic. The way in which we express our true love of Christ is seeing the image and likeness of God in every other human being. So our readings today are sort of a call to reflect, a call to ask, now how much are we demanding that the church conform to us? And I'm not saying everything the church has ever done has been right. Incidentally, most of you know I'm doing a book on World War II in the Vatican. And one of the things that struck me is many people are saying the Pope should not be political. Guess what the Israeli government condemns Pius XII for doing? For not speaking out. That's the official position of the Israeli government. There are three people behind the Holocaust. Hitler, Mussolini, and the Pope because he didn't speak out. Now, one of the things is maybe there's times the Pope can't speak out. There's other times that he should speak out. Do popes always know the right thing to do? No. But nevertheless, we do believe that somehow or other, even in the sinful popes that we've had, still the center of unity of the church continues through them, bringing us together as a visible unity within the world. Not something abstract, but something that's ongoing.